You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hi, everyone. So we're back after a week off, and I'm back after what seems like a substantial time away. I mean, I only missed one pod, but I was off in Hong Kong, you know, for 2 weeks, and I think that kind of all folded into about a month away. So, it's good to get back to the weird world of fantasy football, especially following a weekend where the FA Cup took precedence. And I, Lucy, was glued to all the action. By that, I mean I was glued to watching Ben Credin make alterations to his spreadsheet as the results came in. What a strange world we live in, eh? Anyway, I'm back, and as you just heard, Lucy is too, after a great pod with Nick last time out. All right, Lucy, you weren't glued to the football, I don't think, but continue to be glued, I'm sure, to any transfer rumours surrounding Saints maybe signing a forward, striker, slash anybody who can put the ball in the onion bag, right?
Yes, we've reached that desperate stage of the transfer window where I'm sat watching YouTube videos entitled Vitinha, the next Portuguese goal machine, and receiving updates on private jets reportedly, but probably not, taking players to Southampton Airport. And in that context, that wild, wild transfer window, which sees £105 million spent on a player that's played a good World Cup, in that context, FPL is a very positive and relatively sane distraction, which might be a first. Anyway, We are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL. And you can find me at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, we'll be discussing the butterfly effect in FPL, how often small decisions set us on a certain path, whether that's players or structure, and how that can impact our onward planning. This leads us into a more tactical look at the pair of double game weeks ahead. How should we manage those? Who do we bring in? And arguably, more importantly, who do we overlook as a result of the path that we're on? Then we'll move on to whether I'll be triple captaining. I'm hoping I've worked out by the time we've reached this bit whether I am. And finally, does our overall rank change how we approach these situations? Just for reference, we're recording on the evening of the 30th of January, so the FA Cup fixtures are mostly finished, aside from Derby versus West Ham, and the League Cup semis are yet to come. So we have a good view of the calendar, but Southampton may yet bring a surprise against Newcastle this week. I can't even get through that note.
You can't say that straight.
It doesn't even sound plausible. Yes, so moving swiftly along.
Yes, and the transfer window is open for time of recording as well. So maybe there would be some last minute blockbuster, some more Aubameyang joining the Premier League in the Arsenal days, or Bruno Fernandes joining Man United. I saw he'd been there for 3 years. They tweeted out today. I know. Where has the time gone? Where has the time gone?
Wow.
I know. I'm sure I was younger and better looking back then. Right. Let's move on to what seems like an age ago, the glory and the despair of last week, game week 21, just to give a quick update of where we were, really. As I said in my little kind of note last week, for people who listened to that 20 seconds, I did quite well last week. And Lucy, perhaps not so well. Should we start with you? How did the week go?
Well, do we have to start with me?
I mean, I can go first.
No, you go first. You go first. Let's have your glory. Come on.
Okay, then. All right. So I got 98 points last week. I went into the Friday game needing 8 points from Kane to reach the 100. Scored his goal. So I thought, yeah, you know, I'm on the path to 100 here. Unfortunately, the header in the second half, I think it was, went down as a big chance missed. That took him out the bonus. But obviously, any complaints are highly churlish. 98 points, half my OR, more than half, from 63K to 23K in one fell swoop. And achieved a game week rank of 35K. I've never looked at that before, but someone told me to look at it. And I thought, yeah, that's cool. Basically, I think I benefited, Lucy, from being on holiday and away from the Twitter sphere. And I did listen to the pods with Nick, and I did listen to my usual, so Planet FPL and Above Average, when I was kind of trundling around Hong Kong. I saw which way the wind was blowing online, basically roll it. And I thought, nah, you know, I'm not sure what you're rolling for. Information, yes. But the way it looked to me was that game 25 looked all right because most of us have Arsenal and City assets already. And I felt my team was a bit too template after 3 weeks, small red arrows. So I did Matoma in for Almiron. I wasn't too upset with losing Almiron. I didn't own him for the first half of the season. And his game since the restart hadn't impressed me. And I felt, you know what, this is a chance to, an opportunity to attack by removing a well-owned player that people probably won't want to sell because they've got money in him for a player that perhaps is a bit of a differential. I got very lucky. Matoma scored a screamer, but you've got to buy a ticket to win the lottery, basically. And I was amazingly lucky too. Estupinian stepped up with two assists, 19 points from those two players who are kind of star differentials on live FPL. Just rocket fuel for your overall rank, really. It's not going to happen every week with Estupinian. I went with him over Botman on the World Cup wildcard and got very lucky with what happened this week. And now I can't swap them over. So I'm now kind of on the path of not being able to get double Newcastle defence for a little while. Preview of what we'll talk about in a bit. Elsewhere on my team, Saka scored. Robertson just about kept a clean sheet. I think it was Havertz. He got a goal ruled out in the second minute or something like that. Yeah, overall, I earned 35 points from four differentials with low effective owned players on live FPL, which was huge, really, for the week. So yeah, satisfied, happy to go with my decision against the Herds. That paid off very nicely. I'm in a good position, really, before 2 weeks, which I imagine will be pretty painful for my rank, or could be, if triple captaincies, which I don't have. So I spent that the week I wasn't on the pod on Erling Haaland, who only got 8 points. So Rashford, as we'll talk about, and Haaland's coming up. I suspect it's going to be two weeks where I'm going to be struggling a little bit more as opposed to the week just gone. What about yourself? How did it go?
Badly. I got 77 points, which was another week of subpar performance as my slow, depressing trickle of red arrows continue. That's seven now in the last 10, which is in stark contrast to the start of my season, which was seven greens in the first 10. That takes me from 203k down to 211k. So I'm not hemorrhaging rank. I haven't at any point hemorrhaged rank, but it's this slow trickle that's been the real problem. You mentioned about rolling. I kind of decided I'd stick with Cancelo last week. I didn't expect him to necessarily play. I knew he had to go, but I just wasn't really sure who to replace him with. I'd looked at Stones quite seriously, but then some Man City predictors weren't so hot on him starting, so I wasn't sure that was worth the punt. And then there's obviously the Botman temptation, which I ultimately decided against because I wasn't sure about the risks around game week 25. I'm not particularly well set defensively for 25. At the moment, I'm struggling to get more than white out. So it felt like adding Botman to that might be a bit much. As it was, both Stones and Botman got clean sheets, so it's definitely cost me points waiting. I'm just hoping that it's earned me some flexibility because I've got quite a lot of fires to sort out, Cancelo being one of them. I'm not really keen on keeping with Almiron either, so I'm sure to talk about more later. But that wasn't much cop. My defence in total just didn't do very well because I also had Shaw come in for Cancelo. White continues to refuse to score me points when I actually decide to start him. I decided to start him and he obviously got that nought pointer as well. And then the frustration with Mitrovic may have finally spilled over. More on that later as well. Kane's almost haul. I do think he was very close. That header, you know, that you got excited and thought you'd get to the 100-pointer. Yeah. That would have probably lifted me to a green. As it was, it just minimised the size of the red. So, you know, it's not been a disaster, but it's kind of just an ongoing trend that I need to get a kind of hold on. And I'm sure we'll discuss that more later.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was in the same thing. That's why I kind of, I guess, impetuously moved and, yes, got lucky with the double assist. I think one of the assists for Estupinian was literally a pass on the halfway line.
Yeah, just tapped
Mitoma.
It to him, didn't he? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I remember Rob Holding doing something similar
yes,
to Kieran
Yes, for both of us.
Yeah, a little while
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was a wonderful day, that.
Oh, what an assist that was. But yeah, no, that sort of thing, those sort of things kind of happen every now and again. It's just a high variance outcome, which we'll see. Hopefully I'll get some of those going forward. We'll talk about that as well in just a bit. Just to touch on the Min League update quickly before we get into the main topic this week, market forces will come during the main topic because it's quite segues in quite nicely. I haven't done a mini-league update for a little while because it keeps being mid-double game week, and the next pod will indeed be mid-double game week. Just to give a quick update of the top 10. In 10th, it's Joel Seymour-Hyde with Seymour points. Like it. Down from 6th to 10th this week after a sweet 69. Unfortunately, Captain Mahrez. And I think there was a goal which was ruled out for Mahrez due to a marginal offside, so it could have been so much better for Joel. But as it was, down to 10th from 6th. In 9th, up from 10th, it's Box Divers Gareth Kellis, 78 this week's for Gareth. In 8th, up from 21st, is Sweet Blue Boys Victor Sundahl, 88 points for Victor. In 7th, down from 5th, Durham Scouse Matthew Winkler, 74 points for him. In 6th, down from 4th, he's been in the realm top 10 for quite a while, Harry Liu, 74 points for Harry as well. In 5th, up from 8th, Chris Hughes with Villains, 89 points for him, brought in Odegaard this week, got that last gasp assist, I think it was, wasn't it? In 4th, down from 3rd, Captain Jack Sparrows, Andy Nichols with a 73. Up from 7th to 3rd is Daniel Strand, Strand United, with a big 93 points this week, selling Luca Dean for Big Dan Byrne. That must have been a very, very satisfying move to press confirm on Daniel, dear me. And staying where they were, in 2nd, Rob Brooks, what would Jesus do? 81 points for Rob this week, brought in Botman and Tony. And up top, Mark Bleakley with semi-end. Mark's been on top for quite a while. He's got a 46-point lead in the Min League at the moment, 89 points. I'm pretty sure he's in the top 20 globally as well. That's a very, very good work there, Mark, indeed. Right, let's move on to the main discussion this week, which is about the butterfly effect in FPL. This is a high net narrative genius because I was rooting around for a way to look at this. And Lucy was like, oh, what about this? I was like, yes, this is a great way of doing it. So props to Lucy for coming up with this idea. But yes, the butterfly effect in FPL. What is this? So a bit like the time-bending film from the noughties starring Ashton Kutcher. This is the idea that the small things can have unforeseen wider impacts to your timeline or to the timeline without getting to Marvel multiverse-y yawn. The idea comes from the notion of a butterfly flapping its wings to cause a tornado and sits in the wider remit of chaos theory. So that's the idea that randomness of complex systems is all around us, but there are perhaps some underlying patterns and trends. And to bring this theory from the intellectual heights of academia into the gutter of FPL, we see this all the time in our pokey fantasy game that we play. For example, you might find that, you know, particular injuries mean you've got to deal with a problem rather than being freed to buy the next bandwagon. You may be constrained by the structure you set out with, meaning you're unable to wedge in the additional midfielder on top of the ones that you already have, or make decisions which price you out or restrict you from getting due to squad limits the next big gun when double game week comes up. I've definitely had this before. An example that comes to mind is that big double game week when Stones and Diaz went off. For some reason, I couldn't get to either of them. I can't remember why. I think it was just because I didn't want to sell the defenders I had because I had good fixtures coming up. And yeah, I got massively caned by that. And I guess this leads us to pathways and how the choices we make can have knock-on consequences in FPL further down the line. And we thought this week it was worth discussing that in terms of how it affects us in FPL briefly. And then we'll apply that to the current atmosphere where we have back-to-back double game weeks and look at how we sort of navigate them, especially if we are stuck in this pathway due to the butterfly effect. So impacts of decisions that we made, even way back to World Cup wildcard, which are having their knock-on effects now as we plan for that back-to-back double setup. So let's talk about the butterfly effects in these pathways, Lucy. Bjarte Helgeson asks, you know, what can we do to set our team up for the best possible butterfly path? Is the answer, he says, simply the boring one. Make sure the path is as predictable as possible. I mean, how has this affected you in FPL, you know, recently? And you know, perhaps you can bring it into the season as well.
I think we'll probably talk about it more directly in terms of the post-World Cup wildcard. But I think we did both get into the same pattern before the World Cup when we got into that pattern of Trossard and Maddison and did a load of like little transfers, which we felt compelled to do because it was part of the plan, but kept consistently transferring points out. And I think that's what you can do. I think it's very easy to get stuck into one of these pathways, particularly if you like to plan a few weeks ahead, which when you get to this stage of the season feels almost compulsory, doesn't it? Because you don't want to be left with, say, a lot of blankers in a blank game week, and you don't want to be left exposed to popular players in the double game week. So I think as much as we'll review this and say, oh, we shouldn't have got trapped into this or that, I think it's much easier to do than we probably realise. And it can pay off really well. Like if you get into a good pathway and you're kind of constantly rolling off points, then, you know, it can seem like genius and it can be the reason you do, you know, six green arrows back to back. I think it's when you get stuck into a negative one where you perhaps aren't where you want to be that it can be kind of more of a problem. So I think kind of thinking about my team more specifically, I guess my big decision was that I wanted to go 3-4-3 primarily because I thought that Mitrovic for a double game week was worth having. So I started with Martial over Saka in a 3-5-2. So I went for a 3-4-3 rather than a 3-5-2. And that's basically defined for my performance to a certain extent since then, between a yellow card in the double game week and a double kicked missed pen in the following week. That sold me pretty short and a lot more short than I expected to be. You know, I thought that decision would be not 50-50, but, you know, quite chancy one way or another. And it's conclusively a terrible idea. But I think actually, having kind of reviewed it and looked at what I did with my team, I also left a lot of money in the bank. And that was kind of a big theory behind what I put together after the World Cup was that I wanted to leave myself with supposed flexibility. And so I put in Almiron over Saka. So I could have actually had Saka and Mitrovic. But I kind of got hooked on flexibility and responsiveness and undervalued the transfers that would be required to make the most of that money, especially when I sat on a booked transfer to convert Martial into Mitrovic. And I completely undervalued really how many issues could crop up. I think the defence basically exploding is probably one of those unforeseen issues in terms of Cancelo, for example. By the way, have you ever seen someone fall from grace like Cancelo?
I know. We've got him in the running order to discuss. I mean, we can discuss him here if you'd like.
Sorry, I just can't get over it. Like, I know. All day I've been like, what?
I know. But Morpheus, a friend of the pod, says with Cancelo leaving, what pathways the butterfly effects take us down in terms of what do we do with him? I saw earlier that he's still in the top 10 owned players in the game.
There's all those dead teams, isn't it?
It must be. Yeah, and you. Yeah, the people who have kept the faith.
I don't think it's kept the faith at this stage. Yeah. It's just
I own him by mistake. Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of be linked to it, isn't it? So I got very lucky because I had a few weeks ago when I was choosing, I brought Mitrovic in for that double game week and then shifted him out straight away. As part of that deal, though, to get Mitrovic in, I had to sell Cancelo to get Luke Shaw, and that was the only way I could do it. And that one micro decision has led to, a few weeks later, I've still got Robertson, but I've kind of not got that problem to deal with, if that makes sense. And that's not a circumstance you could foresee, because at the time I could have been thinking, oh, you know what, you know, maybe I want a Stones going forward, or maybe I want something else. But I've been really thinking the last few weeks, oh, I really need to get a City defender in to cover this. Now, when you mentioned in your preamble, when talking about how your team did last week and decisions you could have made, right? That if you'd gotten John Stones, for example, he limped off in the Arsenal game, didn't he? You got your 8 points, but now you'd be sat there thinking, well, all right, I've got another fire to put out as well as kind of something else. It's amazing. It really is. Like how the little decisions can have an impact. Like in contrast to you, I had Saka since the wild card, as you've lamented quite a few times.
I just keep going on about it. I just keep obsessing about that one decision.
I know, versus Mitro and Martial. And you know, that was a conscious choice. But you could have gone with Nketiah instead of Mitro and Martial. And you know, the narrative would be different, I suppose.
I think what I'd have done, though, is I'd have sold Nketiah. So I'd have actually felt even worse, because I'd be like, oh, look at all those points that guy's getting that I sold. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, DB, Lonely Walker 99 said the same thing. But yeah, the genius idea of selling Eddie for Mitrovic for that double game week. And he's been very upset about it ever since.
Yeah, that would drive me insane. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, for me, going for that 3-5-2 And being able to buy the guy like Mitoma, basically, where you know you've got a third forward you've got to play. I had someone to mess around with Almiron that I would buy into cover, and because I didn't choose to get him the first part of the season. So suddenly he was expendable to me. Whereas for somebody who's got loads of value kind of tied up in him, you think about it differently because you think, oh, hang on, this guy served me well, you know, he's got credit in the bank for me. It's that sunk cost idea. And another one I was thinking of was I wildcarded back in game week 6 and then the Queen died. Unforeseen circumstance, of course. But that meant that I have a lot of team value. And this year, it's completely irrelevant, mostly, because as you mentioned, the premium defenders, rip, no Trent nor Cancelo in the mix. So we're flush with cash and team value isn't relevant currently. Premium, for example, isn't a sacrifice really to get this year. But there are loads of kind of different little aspects which lead us down different pathways, and it can be very easy, Lucy, can't it, to feel that you're stuck. Like I'll talk about this later on in my transfers and captains, because I am absolutely now stuck on a path, and for the next up until the blank, I've got my moves pretty much preordained, and that can be weird, and it can be quite frustrating, can't it?
Definitely. And I think it becomes very difficult to think of another way of doing things. Like, you know, you start to weigh up other alternatives and you're like, oh, that involves a hit, which I wouldn't have to take, or that involves losing a player that other people will be heavily owning and, you know, you feel exposed to. So it's really difficult to balance off whether you take basically what is a sensible move, which might kind of confine you and restrict you a bit, or try something a bit more outlandish, which could end up costing you points. So I don't think it's really a criticism, is it, of how people play the game? It's just like an inevitable consequence of the way we plan our transfers, really.
Yeah, and you can end up down all sorts of cul-de-sacs which require problems. So, for example, you know, when I bought Mitrovic, I had to take a -4 to get myself out of that cul-de-sac and buy a Greenwood, basically, to sort my structure out, because I ended up with 12 men, effectively. And that's not how I like to play. So, yeah, there's definitely kind of ways in which you can do it. And I guess we should probably turn the page to double game week now and think about those, or double game weeks, I should say, and think about those. Before we do, though, are you getting bored of double game weeks? So Josh and Always Cheating mentioned this. And as I was listening to them when I was writing these notes, I was like, yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking as well. I mean, it feels like it's too much, doesn't it? There's too many double game weeks, right?
Yes, there are too many at the moment. And I think they feel really constricting. Like, I feel like I have to cover the big guys in those double game weeks. And so you're using transfers so, for example, Bruno, which I'm sure we'll talk about in more detail, I think there's a big clamour to get him now, which is quite understandable because he's done quite well and his stats don't look too bad. But there's this big pressure now to bring in Bruno, who I probably wouldn't have looked at on a single game week. And I'd have probably looked at the Mitomas of this world. But you just think, oh, well, I've got to get that guy, and then I've got to get that guy, and then I've got to be tripled up on this team and then tripled up on that team. It just becomes really like monotonous.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think just overall, it feels like, you know, when you're out having a few beers or a few drinks, and at the end of the night, you have a totally unnecessary drink as one sort of final spot of indulgence. So your train's, you know, in 10 minutes time, but you know, you get given a pint, so you're like, all right, I'll neck it and then I'll go. Like, double game weeks at the moment feel like not having one pint before I go, but having two or three shots of Jaeger before I leave the pub to go home. There's a level of fatigue. It's a bit like if Christmas came every day, sorry, Wizard, it wouldn't be a good thing. Or if it was New Year's Eve every day, like in the Simpsons episode when they're at TGI, I think it's McScratchy's Good Time Food Drinkery, and Marge remarks, it must be wonderful to ring him a new year over and over. And the employee remarks, please kill me. Like, it definitely feels like the magic of double game weeks feels like the magic of the cup, in that it's completely dissipated. It used to be something amazing.
It's a chore now, isn't it? Basically a chore.
After years of these mini doubles becoming commonplace, like, it just feels like lip service to be saying, oh, I'm so excited about this. I mean, fair enough if you are. I mean, that's great. I'm just obviously a haggard and cynical old man. But it just definitely feels like, you know, mad.
Oh. Every year we say next year it'll be normal. We'll be back to normal double game weeks where we can enjoy. And it's like a little, I don't know, celebration of FPL. And every year there's something that goes wrong that makes us sink into this pit of double game week despair.
I know. And there's more to come as well. So you've got the Queen's death. You've got the coronation, which looks like that could smash out another week. So we've got these little mini doubles perhaps happening a lot over the course of the season, because I'm sure they're going to start kind of trying to fit them in wherever they can. And yeah, the upshot to that is that has an enduring impact of planning. Like, it's a real roadblock, as you started to touch upon, how we'd otherwise manage our teams, as we have to account for these sort of short-term needs more than before, with these intervening doubles being announced at increasingly short notice as well. And I think there's also kind of a higher luck factor as well as an impact. So, you know, you can happen to have two or three players who have a double in your team already versus people who have none. And that kind of automatically puts you in a good position. And there's another sort of kind of butterfly effect, sort of pathway thing. I think I remember last year, people ended up, you know, with the doubles being announced pretty quickly, ended up being like, well, hang on, I've got a team for the doublers already. Whereas others had to be like, oh, hang on, I need like -8 to get to the same kind of level of players as you do in this. And trying to figure out how much you lean into the mini doubles compared to the large ones where you always lean in, I think, will be interesting in terms of how people strike the balance, especially if you end up, which I'm sure we'll find, with lesser fancy teams doubling. Hello, Watford and Burnley from last season. Any other impacts? I mean, you did. I think that's probably the big one, isn't it? That it just kind of is an obstacle to planning effectively.
Yeah, I can't think of any kind of obvious ones. As you said, it's more about kind of balancing off risk versus reward, whether you think you need to cover people and whether you don't. And the problem is with a double game week, it's, you know, because there are twice the fixtures for those players, there's almost more swing potential. So if you make a decision not to cover a player and they do go off, it can be like colossal. And you were referencing that Diaz and Stones thing. It's happened on multiple occasions where someone who perhaps isn't that highly rated goes off and you just feel like you've missed out. And it's not necessarily the wrong decision. It's just that the kind of variance and swing all gets magnified by the fact that it's a double game week.
Yep, and everybody's going for it. And if you're left behind, then suddenly, especially depending on where you are in the ranks, you could be absolutely pummeled, can't you? I mean, looking at Fernandez, he's been bought in by almost 440,000 managers this game week. I think he was single figures ownership last time I looked. And now I think he's, well, no, it's still 8.7. So it must be a bit of an engaged core, perhaps the manager's going for it. So it's pretty high to still be in single figures, but there you go. Very, very low base. I'm guessing you started that. Rashford, unsurprisingly, being covered off as well. And Luke Shaw being brought in too. 389,000 managers have brought him in. So the big three, really, for Man United are dominating the market forces. And unsurprisingly, the four guys are likes of Cancelo, Almiron, Salah, and Martinelli as well, who we'll speak about in just a bit. Elsewhere, just to complete the market forces, I probably should. Mitoma has been bought by 450,000 people, still only owned by about 6%. So don't think you missed the boat there if you are interested. And Saka has been bought by 425,000. So double game week in a couple of weeks. And Mitrovic has been sold primarily to buy, well, Nketiah, to 423,000 chances in for him. A couple other things I noticed as well. Mudryk, 175,000 managers, sore enough in the 20-minute cameo to think it was worth buying him. I'm pretty sure most of those are robots. That's for damn sure. And 130,000 people have bought in Rodrigo as well, because Leeds also double. So, double game weeks as they are. Let's stick to the double game week 22 at the moment. What's your plan for it?
Well, I have already done Cancelo to Ake in light of today's news. It looks to me like that significantly improved Ake's prospects. There's that kind of less doubt about him playing left back. And obviously it frees me up 2 million. The reason I've gone today is because I only have exact cash for my other planned moves. And it seemed like a fairly low risk bet given that Man City don't play in the League Cup. You know why? Because Southampton knocked them out, just like I pointed out. Anyway, then I'm looking at Mitrovic to Nonto for his double game week. And those two moves will free up enough to do Almiron to Bruno Fernandes. That's obviously a hit, but that gives me three upcoming double game weekers and deals with two emerging problems in Cancelo and Almiron. So I'm fairly relaxed about the hit. I think it's only my second of the season, so it feels a bit wild for me, but I think it'll pay off, hopefully. Bruno's probably going to be a temporary purchase. I will probably move him on for Saka in the following week. And finally have the man that I've always wanted.
Yes, yes. We all want Bukayo in our lives, really. I just want to give him a hug. And, you know, feed him something nice, and watch a nature documentary with him, and watch his eyes fill with wonder as he sees the elephants walking across the savannah. I just feel like that'd be great to watch with him. Anyway, that aside, yes, that sounds very sensible. I think that's a good way of kind of combining, I guess, the path you're on with dealing with some fires, which, again, you know, they come out of nowhere, and suddenly that can lead you to having to deal with a player. There's nothing worse than it than, you know, when you're watching the news or reading the news on Twitter, I should say, and it was like there's an injury at club, and you're like, please let me be my player, please let me be my player, and you're like, blah blah, there's an injury. You're like, oh, for God's sake! And you see everyone going, yeah, you know, it wasn't my guys are all fine. And like, oh yeah, well, unfortunately, I own this guy, and I've got to deal with it. Anyway, yeah, makes a lot of sense. For me, I am going to be avoiding a hit just because, and the reason I'm going to be avoiding hits hopefully in the next 2 weeks is because I've used my triple captain. So logically, if I go into a game week and those people are triple captained, I start that game week 4 points down, don't I? Because assuming the player plays twice, they get captains. So I cover the captain, player one, player two, but they play again. So just with the appearance alone, that's 4 points. So if I take a hit, I then start the game week effectively on a minus eight compared to people who are triple captaining. I think the next 2 weeks, there are going to be more people triple captaining than probably at any other point, I suspect. I'm sure some people will hold it, and we'll speak about what you're going to do in just a bit. So I'm going to be trying to avoid taking a hit for that reason, because I want to give myself every chance of trying to keep in the situation that I am now. That means that I've only got really one option, which is KDB to Bruno. And then next week, Bruno to KDB. The hokey cokey. Something we've historically been told was a bit of a waste of a transfer, a move that, you know, perhaps people would never have advised in the past. But I think at the moment it is actually something that I don't mind doing, because I mean, it's really team dependent, to use that annoying get out clause, but it is useful for me. So the rest of my team is pretty solid. I'm benching Robertson, for God's sake. That would have been unthinkable in the past, but he's been bench rested Pinion this week. And I've therefore got a really unusual situation where actually swapping the premiums around to suit the fixtures due to back-to-back double game weeks actually makes sense. We've long discussed, you know, this idea of buying and selling premiums to match the game weeks. But in the past, we've never really wanted to sell premium midfielders. Like, you know, Salah was the torch holder for premium midfielders that we would never want to sell regardless. But his avocation of that responsibility means that we can be more movable with these guys, and we don't have to look at the marginal players, you know, to couple double game weeks. We can go for the main men now. And I think that it kind of makes sense to go with Bruno. As I said, one is because of the triple captaincy. So Bruno, I'm not going to captain, but I think he's got a high ceiling, and I suppose everyone's going to be buying him anyway. But I should probably buy him because I'm trying to stack my deck in favor of high variance outcomes to try to cover the extra man many other people will be fielding if they triple captain. And also, when I buy Kevin De Bruyne back, I'm basically buying two extra games when I sell Bruno, even though it is Leeds, because it's the double and also the 25 fixture. So I think that it kind of makes sense to do it, but it's not the nicest, most elegant move in the world, I grant you. It's just one of those, isn't it, where I think that people will be looking at it and thinking, well, if I can only get to Bruno via KDB, but KDB's got a double next week, then maybe they'll start looking elsewhere. And I know overthinking it, or the term overthinking is quite a triggering word for a lot of people, but I think in this case, it's very easy to do that when there actually is an option, even though it can be slightly unpalatable staring at you in the face like that. I mean, do you think that he's just one that you can't really go against this week, thinking about the pathways discussion that we've been talking about?
Well, in terms of the way you're doing it, I think it's perfectly fine to do it as you are in your case with a team that looks relatively shipshape. You haven't got any major fires or any problems. I think doing it that way is perfectly fine. What I do have a problem with or a concern about is people that I've seen suggesting the same move when they've got other things they're kind of ignoring, because that's the kind of simple, easy way to get Bruno in. And I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that he is an awkward price point, and if you do want him, he's probably going to be either a double move, which you might not have the transfer for, potentially a triple move, as it is in my case. So you know, it's a bit awkward unless you, yeah, lose a premium for that one transfer. So I think if you have got lots of things to sort out, I would look at something a little bit more sophisticated or a little bit more kind of ingenious, that you, even if it means stomaching maybe a hit, to look at it a bit more holistically. Whereas if in your case, as you, you know, you don't really have anything else to deal with, it makes perfect sense. Whether he is kind of essential or, I don't know, a must, I don't know if I'd go that far. But I know that with my discomfort with owning or missing high EO players, I know I would struggle to sit there and watch it. I don't think it's necessarily a certainty that he goes off and does brilliant things. Could just the odd assist or something like that and look fairly bleh as a return. So I don't think it's, you know, prepare yourself for a red arrow if you don't have him. I don't think I'd go that far. And it may be that you can't find a nice way of dealing with fires and bringing him in which case maybe look elsewhere. But yeah, I think you're right in the sense that we're seeing people pick him up quite quickly now. Some people will captain him. I don't feel like it's something for me, but I could see why you would do it. And I think that would bring him up to such a level that I wouldn't feel comfortable without him, really.
Yeah. I think the thing is, for a player like that, and I think what I've done in the past, maybe actually that Stones and Diaz example is a good point, is a good actual example of that, is that I think I was busy fixing other things and I couldn't quite, you know, I didn't want to take the minus 12, I don't think it was, to get one of those two in as well on top of it. Obviously, the outcome was highly unlucky for me and highly lucky for everybody else, where Stones scored a brace, for example. But with that, you always feel kind of, it's availability heuristic. Those memories are so high in mind about of things that have happened and risks that I could fall prey to. Like things like the Mitrovic only scoring 10 points, so it probably would have been better for me to ignore that altogether and not bother spending a transfer. Those sort of things sort of fade from your mind. The ones that stick in mind are the things you didn't do well on because you should have taken the chance. And it's going to be quite difficult, I think, unless you're one of these people who can't get to Bruno, so therefore you're leaning into the Bruno's crap story. I think that it'd be quite
difficult. That's quite prevalent on Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, that's why Twitter can be a bit of a nonsense a lot of the time, just because it's like, all right, someone's throwing out this viewpoint, to look at their team. Oh, I know why they're saying that. Because they can't afford them or because they can't get there. So they're building that narrative to suit their own perspective and passing it off as impartial advice. Anyway, I think that he is a player that you've got to really be looking at for this double. I don't need to tell you that, do you? He's fifth for midfielder since the restart in terms of non-pen XGI and been tracking Rashford quite nicely, actually. Hasn't blanked once, I don't think, since the restart either. So certainly a player that I think is going to be featuring in a lot of people's teams. And as you said, and as I've said, I think it's probably going to be a one-week punt really on Bruno, albeit that Leeds away game. I feel like that is a recipe for disaster, really, if I'm selling.
As again, though, we're the double game weeks are dictating what we do, aren't they? Like, we are switching him out again because of double game weeks. If it wasn't for them, we'd have left him. And that annoys me, that I feel like I'm having to pass up potential opportunities because I feel compelled to cover off these other players.
Yeah, maybe I won't bother doing it. Maybe, you know, Bruno will be so good that I'll just think, you know what, I'm going to do that. Because Kevin De Bruyne has been out of sorts for quite a while, hasn't he? And you know, didn't play a game a couple of weeks ago, did he? Missing the Spurs game. So maybe it is the case that I try to look past it a little bit. I mean, I don't think he missed the Arsenal game. Surely not. But we will have to see. Yeah. Okay. So if we're both looking at Bruno, and I think probably most people at large are looking at Bruno, there are other options though. Veghorst, could you ever go back there again?
No.
No? All right.
I think it really depends on that one. I don't think he's necessarily a terrible, you know, if like us on Bruno, you might be looking at Veghorst as a 1 week punt before you go to Nketiah or something like that. That could be quite common in structures, I'm just thinking. I think there are worse ideas. The problem there is that it really depends on Martial news. You would think a returning Martial would steal his minutes and if not a start, and in which case it probably kills both of them as options for the double. So I don't hate it, but I don't love it. I guess the other one would be Martinez. I don't know if you've... I think we both sort of vaguely discussed him at one point, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at this. So United's defence has been doing all right since the restart. They're seventh from bottom in terms of expected goals conceded. Although the likes of Nottingham Forest and Southampton are actually doing better in terms of expected goals conceded than United are since the restart. They've conceded the third fewest big chances, though, for whatever that's worth in Opta data. That's equal with Man City on 5. Newcastle, when you conceded one big chance in 5 games. Ridiculous job Eddie Howe's doing there. And United have also conceded the 5th least shots on target. Combine that with Leeds and Palace being bottom half for XG from open play since the restart. Palace are actually second bottom for that. Then maybe you've got a case. Plus, you don't mess around. If you do own KDB or a City asset that you're looking to move on to Bruno, then mess around with him and you have him there for Spurs. Hope he returns to being his big game Kev. And then you can do something else for your transfer in 23 potentially as well, i.e. maybe move on Martinez to a City defender or something like that. So it is an option, isn't it, to go with double defence? And I can see why. I think it's just the upside, or at least the anticipated ceiling that Bruno provides you, means that for me it's worth doing. But if you can't get to United's, if you can't get to Bruno, I think probably your options are to go for that double defence. I'm not sure I'd be interested in Veghorst unless, as Lucy said, you'd be looking to move on to Nketiah. And your option is just to leave it, isn't it, really?
My problem with Martinez, having kind of looked at it, because I was looking at a much duller move which didn't involve a hit. My problem there is that, and I think it will be a problem for a lot of people, is that if you have Trippier and Shaw and a few people have Botman or Pope or someone like that, you're not looking great for 25. And if you add Martinez on top of that, then you're looking very stretched for 25. I don't think you need to pull out a full 11 in 25, but I think you probably need to put out more than one defender. And that's what I'd have probably been looking at if I'd gone for Martinez as well. So that was kind of ultimately what really turned me off that. So that's another thing to consider just when you're looking at players, your kind of likelihood of getting those players covered.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because you want to kind of be on that sort of the same boat, near enough the same boat as everybody else. And you do kind of, if it is United and it is Leeds and it is Crystal Palace, and I think that probably is very difficult to try to bargain down logically. I mean, if you are sat there with De Gea, Shaw and Rashford, it's one of those where you've kind of already made your bed. There's a butterfly effect has already occurred for you. It's got you. And unfortunately, unless you're kind of countenancing a -4 or a -8 to make that work, I'm assuming you don't have the money for De Gea to Kepa and then trying to move another midfielder around to Bruno unless it's KDB. You've already sort of made your bed there. It is quite difficult, and it's something that we'll definitely explore in the second half as well as we get on to the rest of the teams, Bob, Leeds, for this double game week, triple captioning, and also next week to come. All right, let's take a break there. Back in just a second.
Who got the assist?
Right, so we're back, and after covering United a little bit, I think Leeds are probably just worth briefly mentioning before we move on to triple captain, maybe for this week and also for next week. So I'm not interested, basically, in Leeds because of all the reasons I've suggested. So my path means that any move for a Leeds player would involve a hit, and I'm not really set up to bring any Leeds player, really, apart from maybe Nonto or Greenwood. But even then, I'd have to bench like a Matoma or something like that to make it work. So
it's a hard life, isn't it?
I know, but it doesn't seem worth it for me. I mean, looking at a goalkeeper, defence, nah. Midfield, maybe Rodrigo, those people are going there. Up front, I mean, Rutter's signings, confusing matters. The least French name I've ever heard, Rutter.
Rutter.
I mean, Nonto probably is the one, isn't it? But it's worth noting that Forest, as mentioned, have got a lower XGC than United and are especially decent at home. So it's not looking like the best double game week, really, for them on paper. But Nonto is a good enabler, and it looks like he's the only place you'd kind of seriously go outside of punting quite heavily, right?
Yeah. I mean, in a normal season, under normal circumstances, I mean, Bamford would tempt me, given that he's looking a bit better, but I looked at his price. He's still north of £7 million. I can't be, you know, signing off that kind of fee. I've seen a few people discussing Struijk and Melier, and I can't get behind either of those. I think they've kept four clean sheets in the opening 21, and that's less than Spurs, Forest and Leicester. I mean, come on. Those are teams that we wouldn't want. Like, woof. Why would we want Leeds? and as you said, yeah, Routier just adds to the general confusion about their attackers. I've just seen they've just been linked to Zaniolo this evening as well.
Oh,
I mean, who hasn't been this window? So, yeah, I think you're basically taking a one-week punt on a player. And for that reason, I don't think you want to spend a lot of money on it. And that's kind of primarily why I'm on Nonto.
Yeah.
He allows me to kind of reassess going back to 3-5-2. Dead cheap. I've been really irritating Leeds fans on Twitter by going, so how many minutes do you think Nonto plays over a double game week? And they all seem fairly positive on his minutes, so kind of like north of 150. So I'm taking that. I think he's just decent from a structural perspective, really. If you want to look at switching things around, he's a really nice way of doing it. Rodrigo, I don't know if his minutes are going to be slightly confined now that Routier and Bamford are around, and that would concern me a bit. And he also just hasn't been playing brilliantly recently. You know, I've watched him a couple of times and not been wildly impressed. So, you know, I know he was doing very well at the beginning of the season. I've gone a bit cool on him now. But, you know, he is a decent price point. And, you know, if you want to look for simple, quick moves where you might go to an Odegaard afterwards, then, you know, it's not the worst in the world. But, yeah, I've only really considered Nonto with any serious reason, really.
Yeah, Enabler FC, I'd agree.
Yeah.
So, yeah, United. Bruno, probably, if you can't really get there, either don't buy into the narrative that he's not a good pick, or, you know, maybe go for double defence and hope for the best, because the defence is okay, but maybe not recourse unless you've got a very, very strong stomach. And Leeds, yeah, Nonto. That kind of is it for that double game week. And the next one's, obviously there's loads of games to be played, so we'll touch on it, but not in much detail. But yeah, Rich Free Arsenal with Everton up next. I know Sean Dyche has just been appointed, but probably can't expect him to immediately start turning in Burnley-esque 1-0s. FPL JMO James writes in from Exotic Itchin. He says, yeah, due to recent upcoming double, I still don't have Free Arsenal. He says, do we need to start prioritising buying in players like players from Arsenal rather than buying in players that play twice in double game week? And do I really do it this time? And I think the answer for both of us probably be yes. It's probably worth looking at getting an Arsenal player in very soon, maybe even this week for that Everton game, because it just sets it up and gets it sorted out. So, I mean, with Arsenal, Lucy, there's probably four in the mix. I mean, we'll talk about the defence in a minute. There's four in the mix. There's Nketiah, there's Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka. But you want Saka in, don't you? And you're going to add him to Martinelli?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at Martinelli. I don't know if I still want him, but I can't ever reconcile with taking a hit to move him out for another player from the same team. Don't think he's deserved to get as many points as the other two, but he's probably deserved to get more than he's got, if that makes sense. So, you know, I don't think the gap's as wide as we think it might be. It's just kind of who's scored and who hasn't. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with Martinelli for now, and then it'll just be a question of adding Saka or Odegaard. I think when we were talking about Bruno earlier, I think it is a perfectly valid option to go straight to Saka if you're not that sold on Bruno, or straight to Odegaard if you're not that sold on Bruno, and just have that done and dusted, ready for 23.
Yeah,
I don't think that should be completely discounted. And it was one of the options I looked at. So, you know, if I'd gone for Martinez as my third Man United player, I'd have probably put Saka straight in for Almiron. So I think that's a perfectly valid way of doing it. I am still stuck with White, who is giving me a bit of anxiety. Do you think he keeps playing at right back?
That's the problem, isn't it? So obviously a bit of a difficult game last game, but he has been playing very well for us and does provide that important sort of extra man going forward. I mean, it's been wide documented. It was a document to The Athletic about how he'd been used by Arteta at providing an overload in attack. And I think that White at the moment is still the most attuned to be playing that role. The problem is that on the first few weeks when he came back from restart, there wasn't as much congestion in terms of games. With that congestion, you may well see, because Tomiyasu, let's not forget, is a very capable right back or backup right back. And in double game week, for example, I mean, I'm not sure I'd be particularly surprised actually to see White not show up for one of the games. I wouldn't be shocked, for example, if Brentford, he ended up not being played and Tomiyasu played that game. That's a hunch. I've got no inside information about that. I think if I had my time again, for sure, like I've got Ramsdale, and I'm going to leave Ramsdale now because that's the way it is. But if I went with Kepa initially and I didn't go with an Arsenal defensive asset, I wouldn't bother right now, and I just get three attackers. Basically, I try to get three attackers if I possibly could, just because the data is ridiculous. Like, I had a look at the data post restart for the Arsenal 4 Amigos, and wow, like one person stands out, and that's Eddie Nketiah. Like, it's absolutely crazy, really. Like, he's got almost double the expected goal involvement of everybody else, and he's actually slightly underperforming it. So for context, 4.84 is expected goal involvement, and he's got four. For further context, Gabriel Martinelli, Odegaard and Saka are on around 2.5, 2.7 each. Odegaard is hugely overperforming, so 2.34 goal involvements more than he should have. And if you're on a 3-4-3, I think I'd be probably looking at Nketiah if you can get him in for like a Mitro or something like that. My bugger worries about Jesus, frankly. There's loads of ways you can skin the cat, basically. Looking at XGI, Martinelli is actually better than Odegaard and Saka currently, which surprised me because to the eye, it's not quite working out that way. Non-pen XG, Saka's currently ahead, and there's loads of ways you can look at it. But basically, they're all quite good assets, and Nketiah's got a higher XGI than anybody else. But it feels like the old days, like when me and Nick started out in 2017, we were talking about the red roulette then when we were speaking about Liverpool, and it was basically every week, Salah, Coutinho, Firmino, or Lallana, any of them could have returned, and you just kind of had to hope that you had the right kind of combination. And I feel like it's kind of like that again. I would say on Martinelli, that Nketiah, it's not as beneficial for him as it is with Jesus. Jesus and him interchange a lot in terms of how they attack and play positionally. Nketiah doesn't do that really in the same way, which has been affecting Martinelli. Martin doesn't have an overlap. He has an underlap, and his name's Granit Xhaka, which kind of works differently than right back, where you've got a Ben White sort of character, whereas Zinchenko is obviously sitting in midfield rather than rampaging up the pitch. Trossard, X-Men's threat, yes. Although I wouldn't quite characterise him as a starts threat just yet. Maybe the logic I just mentioned with White could actually work with Trossard as well. You never know. But Martinelli is immediately facing Seamus Coleman next. So that in itself would make me think, you know, he's the third or fourth most sold player at the moment. I'd be worried about that. Martinelli has also just signed a new contract. And Martinelli can also play up front as well. So you know, if the ball does go up, as Mark, our friend FPL General, mentioned on Above Average this week, it might not be Martinelli who goes off for Trossard. It might be that Nketiah goes off for Trossard and Martinelli goes up front. You just don't know at the moment with them. But yeah, it just feels like red roulette, really, trying to decide which one to go for. To answer James's question, I think it certainly is worth trying to get. If you've got a space this week to do it, the Everton game's there, I go for it. But having double attack, I think from now onwards, given the value, it's outrageous. I just wouldn't really hesitate from doing that. Like if I was wildcarding right now, I'd go for Odegaard, Saka and Nketiah and sack off the defence. But hey, you know, it's just ridiculous, isn't it, really? It reminds me of when you could get Dele Alli, Eriksen and Kane all in one team that year for Spurs when it was them and Leicester facing off. It really is that sort of situation when we're so underpriced that it's just ridiculous what we can do. All right. And City, I suppose, is the other side of that, isn't it, really? I think most of us will have Haaland, probably De Bruyne, although Mahrez is probably going to be fairly widely owned, etc. I mean, the defensive minefield is quite interesting, though, isn't it? I mean, you've just bought into Ake. Those people did buy into Stones who went off injured against Arsenal. It's definitely an interesting sort of areas to look at. And as I mentioned earlier, Morpheus asked, with Cancelo leaving, what do we do? I mean, Ake was the standout for obvious reasons, although you know Laporte historically did the goal threat. Is it just because of that left back and the versatility of Ake that kind of thought, oh yeah, I'll go with that?
Yeah, basically. I feel like Ake's got two chances at starting, so it's kind of that way of looking at it. And obviously getting 7 million back for Cancelo and only having to spend 5 million on Ake, that's 2 million released, which is a pretty big difference when it comes to reallocating funds and buying someone like Bruno, who, you know, is normally quite difficult to reach. So it really came down to that, really. And I do think there might be just validity in ignoring their defence altogether, unless you've got Edison or you need to make a goalkeeper transfer. I don't love doing those unless I have to. But unless you've got Edison, maybe just not bothering at all is possibly a good idea. You know, in the sense that we're talking about Arsenal, is it really worth bothering with their defence because there's so much value in their attack? It's kind of slightly different for City, but potentially Mahrez and KDB could work quite nicely. Don't know, might not. But, you know, I don't think there's a massive need to have all three City slots used because there are so few of them that have got reliable minutes coming out of them. Yep. And they're not, none of them are cheap. So, you know, I can be sold on the Mahrez thing, but I also just don't know if you'd need to necessarily have three City, which seems bizarre, like a really weird thing to be saying.
It does.
But yeah, it's just the minutes. It's the Pep roulette that's killing us at the moment, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, as I said earlier on, I'm not planning to take a hit, which means that I'm likely to just have Haaland and a midfielder who is likely to be Kevin De Bruyne. And defensively, they've been very good. So second best defence to Newcastle in terms of expected data. I would point out, though, that Villa haven't done too badly in terms of XG from open play since the restart. And Arsenal are doing very well as well. So I wouldn't be surprised by a four-pointer from City defenders in that one. And also, I've got decent single game week players in that week. So I don't think I'll be running on City assets, but I think we'll touch on this more next week. Something to mention quickly, though, is triple captains, Lucy, and before we move on to what we're missing by focusing on all these players. A question from Goops this week. Rashford and 22, Haaland and 23 have been discussed to death, and we're about to discuss that a little bit. He also mentions that Arsenal are doubling in 23 too, so maybe could a Saka triple captain, something like that, be on the table? I mean, just to say, obviously, I haven't got a triple captain right now, but I'm honestly a little bit more worried about Haaland in 2 weeks' time than Rashford this week. I don't know why that is. I think it's just because of the fact that Haaland can demonstrably just do it whenever.
Yeah.
Whereas
Rashford, he's got four hat-tricks so far this season, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And whilst that Arsenal fixture is the toughest one he'll face, there's still plenty of opportunity for him to do well out of it. And I think there's a proper fear factor around Haaland that probably isn't around Rashford, despite the fact Rashford's probably got better minutes in him and better fixtures. So I'm finding it really hard to reason that one out. I definitely will be playing it in the next 2 weeks. I've got no interest in taking triple captaincy further than that because I think there are going to be limited opportunities to get it out, and I wouldn't want to feel that my triple captaincy chip was causing me some kind of tension in terms of working out how I was going to get other chips out. So I will definitely play it. But it's interesting that you say that, you know, you're more worried about Haaland than you are about Rashford, because that kind of leans me towards Haaland on the basis that, you know, I like to know the people that have used their triple captaincy, what they are more scared of, because I think that gives you a kind of good balanced view on where you might be able to use it. But yeah, I'm finding it really difficult to split them at the moment.
Is there anything else other than my personal opinion, which is good? The data's there, isn't it? I mean,
data's there, yeah. It's just whether, you know, Rashford getting that extra point for a goal, his better fixtures, his probably better minutes, whether those kind of little pluses that he has against Haaland negate the kind of horrible hat trick doom that I feel around him. I don't know if it does. And I feel like it's going to be another week in 23 where Haaland has big ownership that you feel like to get anything kind of beneficial out of him, it's got to be a triple captaincy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely 2 weeks. I think it's more of a hope than an expectation that Rashford will stay below the 200% EO this week. And I'm sure Haaland's EO will be pretty high for the Villa and Arsenal games. So yeah, it's definitely it's an annoying situation as someone who's used a triple captain, which is unusual, actually. I don't think I've ever been in this position before where I'm sitting now waiting, been like a sitting duck or a lamb who's about to be slaughtered, just waiting to see where the pain will come from. So it's not very nice. But yeah, no, I can see, I think there's a lot of people who are going to just be bifurcating on that one up until the very end, because it's not really cut and dried. Probably on paper you favour Crystal Palace and Leeds, but it is Haaland. And you know.
That's literally the counter argument to Rashford is it's Haaland. Like that's literally all there is. But that's in itself a huge point. You know, we've never seen a player do this to the Premier League in the way he's doing it, and he could go wild despite bad fixtures.
Yeah. Okay. So on the other side of what we were mentioning in terms of buying into the double game weeks, there's obviously the counterbalance to that. Nathan Jacobson asks, you know, do people put too much emphasis on the distant future rather than the near future when making transfers? For example, people are reluctant to bring in Matoma, which makes me very happy as an owner. I promise I didn't pay Nathan to say that, but it's very interesting to kind of think about that because, you know, for example, I got Matoma in last week, and now I've got Bournemouth, Crystal Palace and Fulham for that guy, whereas people have Almiron, are now trying to deal with double game weeks, single game weeks or whatever. And kind of it feels like there's a real sort of pathway that feels laid out to people. And the likes of Matoma and in the past other sort of individuals who have been doing very well. I remember Luca Dean, for example, going on a ridiculous rampage two seasons ago where he got double figure result. We completely ignored him because all we were interested in was doubling players. I mean, do you think that there's ever a time to be the likes of Matoma, are they really ever going to be featuring in your mind if you're kind of busy being preoccupied by these double game weeks? It just feels like kind of that roadblock is hard to see past, isn't it?
I think it probably comes down to that kind of what we're talking about, a path set for you. If you are in a position where you're quite well set for doublers, say for example as you are, then I don't think there's any, I don't have any qualms with going after Brighton. I think it's the problem is when you feel like you're chasing doublers, like you're not that well set, it's quite difficult to make the argument for someone like Matoma over an alternative if you can use that slot elsewhere. I mean, obviously, there isn't actually a direct alternative for Matoma from terms of price point, but, you know, that slot, if you need to use that for a doubler, it's quite difficult to make a case for a Brighton player, knowing that the ceiling on a doubler is probably higher. So it really comes down to how you're set, how your team's looking. If you've got yourself in quite a good position for the doubles, I think that's when you're in a point where you can look at Brighton players and the more advantageous single weekers. But I'm not well covered. And I feel like the best way to give myself an opportunity to get up the ranks is by going for those doublers, because just by their very nature, there's more in them. I think if I was in your position, either well set or doing well for rank, then there's a lot of opportunity there. I think also that because March and Matoma are well priced, they're also quite good make weights in kind of any restructure or releasing of funds and that kind of thing. The difficulty for me was that I needed a cheap forward for my planned moves rather than a cheap midfielder. And obviously Ferguson's minutes weren't quite so secure as those two. And I kind of, before that, even before the injury that he suffered as a result of Fabinho's challenge, it kind of made Nonto the obvious choice just because he had the extra fixture as well.
Yeah, definitely. Nathan mentions obviously the distant future. The difference is that we've got this double game week kind of now rather than the blank game week in a few weeks' time. I think if there wasn't these doubles, then I'd be kind of saying to people very strongly, just disregard or just keep at the back of the mind the fact that you've got this blank game week coming up. I wouldn't over worry about blank. I think that we do this, we've been conditioned to do this a lot in FPL over the last few years. And I think that it is like a bit of a scaremongering tactic, really. It's definitely a talking point that there's a blank to come, right? But actually, all you're doing really is just buying 2 points in for the future. But because there's this immediate double, I think that complicates things. It muddies the water.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to say, yeah, get Matoma over getting Bruno Fernandes, for example. I know that sounds a bit of an ad absurdum point, but it does stand because you have to, it's the reality of the situation is that it's very difficult to look past unless you've got a very strong hunch. And if it pays off, then fantastic, well done to you. But I've seen lesser managers and better managers also kind of try to be, I guess, it's guarding against being too clever, I suppose, maybe.
Yeah, I think you can get obsessed with the blanks, and I've done it in the past, and I told myself not to do it this time. I think you're right in the sense that you should just see a blank player as losing 2 points. You know, it's a 2 point margin in things. So if you can't equal up 2 points against the player you've already got, then maybe maybe swallow the blank. Like, I think it's very likely we will see a lot of teams without 11 in 25 just because of the quantity of good teams that are missing it. So I wouldn't let that define what you do. At the same time, in marginal decisions, I think you should factor it in because it's just a good way of planning ahead. So, you know, if you've got two teams that are very tight, two players that are very tight, then I would factor it in because you're just making life easier for you down the line. But yeah, I think you are right that people over obsess about what could be the potential impact of a blank game week, and often blank game weeks are full of rubbish points anyway.
Yeah, damp squibs, terrible. I mean, if there is a big team that has a blank, guess what? We've more than likely already got those players. So yeah, I think it's just it's very easy to, you know, start to sway people down one particular path. And I don't know. It definitely is one of those. But if there wasn't double involved, I think I'd be a lot stronger on just ignoring, or at least leaving blanks to be dealt with by future you. The final thing we were going to mention, something that you mentioned to me kind of when we were starting to think about this pod last week, was this idea of rank impacting things and how I look at things. You mentioned a few times, you know, you're in this position, so you look at things a little bit differently. And I think we spoke about it when you were a bit down in the dumps at the end of last week, Lucy. You know, I was saying, you know, maybe it might be a good thing to, you know, maybe differentiate more, saying, you know, I tried to consciously get more of those sort of star players on live FPL, or, you know, low effective own players to try to help my situation. But you were pretty hot on this idea of kind of small marginal gains as the season progresses. I mean, do you think that's due to rank difference? Do you think that's due to play style? I think that's probably something that we can come back to in a later pod, because it's quite a big sort of topic to go on to. But I mean, what do you think about this?
Well, so I've been keeping quite a close eye on, you know, the live FPL safety score. So when I've taken red arrows, like how far off I am from avoiding the red arrow. And it's a fairly consistent theme that it's 2 or 3 points that are causing these red arrows, which isn't a disaster, but obviously it kind of has that cumulative problem. And I just think that it's been a fairly consistent theme from having a team that's just behind the template. So I always think that being a template player isn't a problem, as long as you don't find yourself chasing it and being like a couple of players behind it, because that's when you get into this problem of having, you know, this slow erosion of points. So I think if I can get on the other side of the template, so be a bit aggressive this week, potentially a bit more aggressive next week, over the next few weeks, and get back in front of the template, I can start to get those marginal gains that you were just referencing. I don't yet think that I'm at a point where I need to do more than that, or be more bold with it. I think obviously this is a style thing, so there obviously the famed late riser would have a very different way of doing this with a lot more aggressive style of play. But I think at the moment I'm okay with marginal gains, and then I've kind of resolved that I'll reassess when I get to the next wild card, and then have a moment where I can re-strategize if I need to, if I haven't made those marginal gains, and look at bigger punts, knowing that I can get certain areas of the squad more secure. So you've got those, you've kind of got the building blocks in that you've actually got that I haven't had, which has caused me a little bit in flux.
Right.
And then use that as an opportunity to be a bit more targeted and thoughtful about those differentials. Because at the moment, I feel like I've had too many fires to be as strategic about those differentials as I'd want to be. So if you kind of try to diverge at the wrong moment, you actually end up eroding your rank really quickly.
Yeah, it really is about, as you said, as we've kind of spoken about a lot on the pod, about pathways, and you kind of finding yourself suddenly with lots of fires compared to me finding myself looking fairly okay, touch woods, has kind of meant that our paths have diverged a slight bit. But, you know, with the moves you've said you're going to do this week and being a touch aggressive with them, that is a point where you can kind of take the opportunity to do something to try to mitigate the circumstances that you've been kind of befell by recently. And it always is about circumstances, annoyingly. There's no yes or no about this. And for example, you know, touching on transfers and captains a bit, and as I mentioned earlier on, the next 2 weeks for me are going to be primarily defensive. So captains will be Rashford and Haaland. I've used my triple captain, and my transfers are completely preordained. But I know I'll be doing KDB, to Bruno and probably back to KDB again. And in the past, I'd have been chafing about this, you know, and looking for galaxy brain ways around that. But I'm going to try to trust my squad, as I think I said pre-wildcard as well, the first half of the season. Because it's one of those things, isn't it, where I've not made many big changes since the restart, apart from the ill-fated Mitro fling. And the things just return me quite a lot of points. So, you know, it's just trying to kind of keep everything kind of on a level. But it's about taking those opportunities when they present themselves to you. Like, you're trying to take the opportunity this week. I tried to take the opportunity last week. I would say, though, if you are maybe, you know, 700, 800K, you know, 50, 100 points off the pace, I've been there last couple of seasons, last four or five seasons at some points. And one of the things that I really regret is not the things I did, but the things I didn't do. So, you know, I remember like a Rashford captaincy against Sheffield United when he scored a brace, and I didn't do it because I was too worried about Salah and he blanked. And, you know, not buying assist defender for that double game week, yes. The following year, I didn't buy assist defender and captain one. Like I told myself I'd do kind of the week before because I was too worried about buying somebody else who everybody else owned in on Twitter, basically. And I think this year, as I've said quite a few times, actively stepping away from FPL Twitter a little bit, or treating it as a way to pass the time rather than information source that I take very seriously, has really helped. Like, I think if you're not happy with your rank, you can take a few chances, and you shouldn't feel like you're kind of following the herds. You need to follow the herd as much, because who cares what FPL friend is doing this week if it's not something that you think is the best for you? Like, don't feel like you should do it because everyone else is doing it. Like, for 5 years, that's kind of what I was doing the whole time. And I don't know, I think the one thing I regret, if I was really chasing that 700K at this point, was not taking more chances, because at the end of the day, you haven't really got that much to lose, really. And yeah, I mean, that's something that kind of does come to mind for me. But where you are, Lucy, it definitely is a case that it's about kind of targeted opportunism rather than kind of nakedly going for the Hail Mary, which again, I wish I'd done more when I was really chasing. If you're kind of hoping to eke out those incremental gains, it makes a lot of sense to just do what you're doing. Right, towards the end then, transfers and captains. FPL Lovejoy, do we plan for blank game week 25 for transfers now, or roll through that 1 week with 8 to 9 players? I think maybe you already got to be thinking about this, Lucy. You've already mentioned it to some extent, but just to confirm, where are you with your transfers and captains? Well, captains should be fairly obvious, but transfers this week?
Yeah, so my transfers, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, are Cancelo to Ake, which I've already done. Mitrovic to Nonto, which brings in another double game weaker. And those two moves afford me Almiron to Bruno. So that's -4. My captain will be Rashford. I just don't know yet if I'll triple captain him. I'm leaning against it, but who knows? It's one of those ones that I'll keep flicking around with. I think in terms of double game week 25, that kind of question around that, I think we've probably covered that in the sense that we're fairly relaxed about having a couple of blankers. I think it'll be very common to have a couple of blankers, and I wouldn't destroy your team to avoid it either. So I'm pretty happy with that plan on transfers. It's just whether price changes push me to go a bit earlier than I'd like, as it has with the Ake thing.
Yeah.
And if any injuries pop up, I'll have to pivot quite quickly, and I don't quite know what that'll look like.
I'm sure it'll be fine. To answer Lovejoy's question, as I see it now, I've got 9 players for that blank in 25, 10 if Patterson is fit. As after doing 2 free transfers, you know, Greenwood and Estupinian out for someone like Nonto and Bueno, something like that. I think that's probably going to be okay, 10 men, because I'll be covering all the big picks as it stands. So, you know, barring a random double game week being thrown in, or, you know, something being thrown into the round five of the cup midweek, when if teams are all out of the cup, maybe there'll be a Premier League fixture scheduled then to ease fixture congestion. I don't know. I'm just going to let future Tom deal with it, basically, and assume it will be okay. I know that sounds incredibly sort of casual from a very engaged sounding podcast, but after 5-6 years of doing this, you start to realize that that's actually perfectly viable as a strategy, actually, and we overthink and we over sort of emphasize how much value information has.
But actually, and we buy rubbish players, don't we? We buy rubbish players every year because they've got a fixture. And really, what does that gain us apart from another transfer down the line? I mean, it doesn't, it's not really worth it. And I think about it every time and I always ignore myself. So I'm going to stick with it this time. If I don't want to play a long term, similarly to how I was approaching doubles earlier in the season, if I don't want that player, then I'm not going to just buy them for that 1 week, really.
Yep. Learning the lessons of Emmanuel Dennis, learning the lessons of, you know, getting in a Matt Lowton or something. Although Matt Lowton did actually get me an assist and a clean sheet once. But, you know,
that's why it's stuck in your memory, isn't it? You don't remember all the duds, do you?
Yeah, exactly. But you're buying players like that just because they have two fixtures and be like, oh, I got my 4 points. That was what I wanted. Yeah, now I've got to deal with them unless I wildcard them out, which is fine. Transfers and captains wise, I'm doing KDB to Bruno and back again. That sounds like the FPL equivalent of the Hobbit there and back again. But hey, there we go. Rashford captain and hope his EO doesn't make 200%. So hopefully people who listen to this pod will be influenced by me like Lucy has been. Don't triple captain this week. So my pain is just lasted to 1 week, which is next week. yeah, bit of a boring period for me. As I've mentioned, I'm kind of stuck. Not in a bad way, because the guys have just got me 98 points. But I've got the same team basically until game week 25 now, because I'm trying to use all my experience to avoid the urge to change things up. Basically, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be buying Bruno, then selling him again to get the same team again in 2 weeks. So it's like the worst free hit ever. And basically, I'm keeping the same team until 25, because I'm going to try to roll in 24 as well. So lots of trusting in the team. And just seeing where the preordained moves take me, seeing where the path takes me, and hoping the butterfly's tornado it will blow me in the right direction rather than the wrong one. But I mean, I'll be delighted with a small green after the next 2 weeks. But I'm expecting, you know, two reds in a row, really, from here. Well, that's a lot. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week for another mid-double game week pod. It's starting to get a bit old now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a lot of... Oh, we don't actually know what's happening yet, but bear with us. Anyway, I hope you haven't mind too much. Thanks for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynett. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. Hope the butterfly effect in FPL was of interest to you in terms of something to talk about this week. Again, props to Lucy, the narrative genius, for coming up to that. I thought that's very interesting. And thanks for listening. My hope says to you, and we'll speak to you very soon. Farewell.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.